It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Right now, without further ado, and this gentleman, wait a minute, turned on the wrong switch. Got to hit the right button here. Good morning to Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Had a good weekend, Thanksgiving.
Now, you had 30 people, right?
Well, almost. We had my six kids and their spouses and 13 grandkids.
13?
And we had a great week. We played games, we ate, we danced, we did everything, and also found out that number 14 grandchild is on its way.
Really? When do they expect it to knock on the door?
About July.
Really?
But I have a tradition, Zeb, that with my kids, when they have their first child, I build them a cradle.
Oh, boy.
And let them design it how they want it, you know, what style, one thing, another. So I'm going to build my fifth cradle here. And I enjoy doing that, though.
God bless. You know, see, I don't have that talent. I would hand them a shoebox.
Well, that would work for a little while.
It'd have to be the size of Shaquille O'Neal's.
Yeah.
Have a good Thanksgiving, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was
so did
nice.
We. We went up to Toby's.
Yeah.
And we had about 19 or 20 people up there. And it was phenomenal. My daughter, I hope she's listening right now this morning, she had a menu that would knock your socks off delicious. It was great.
And for the next few days, we eat some more, right? I finished it off last night.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to go to a mining area and an event that took place there, but I need to give a little bit of background. We're going to be talking about an area in Northern California, a couple of rivers. One, the Trinity River.
Which, I know where it is.
It's a major river in the northwest of California.
I've been on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's the principal tributary of the Klamath River, which flows through Oregon and California and into the Pacific.
Right.
So, and then I'm going to talk about a couple of tribes that are a little lesser known. There's one called the Hoopa Indians, and they're located in what's called the Hoopa Valley, which is about an 8-mile stretch long along the Trinity River. And then there's and I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, the Karuk Indians, which means up river people, and they lived along the Klamath. So, and they actually lived in wooden houses. So that kind of gives you an idea of where we're going to be talking about this story.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, for miles up and down the diggings where Northern California's Klamath River forks off from the Trinity, and pick and shovel miners, they were swarming over this place every place they could get, you know, like ants.
A lot of gold up there.
Yeah, and they all knew of a guy by the name of Philip Kane Rickmeyer. Okay, so he's the main character we're going to be talking about today. Philip Kane Rickmeyer. And they always thought he was a little bit odd. Okay, a little bit different. And
eccentric.
You'll understand as we go along here.
Okay.
And not that he was unfriendly. He was civil enough to talk to and was generous to a fault. And he would actually help out a fellow gold miner if the guy was going through a rough spell, if his claim just kind of gave out. So he was a good guy, well known among the other miners.
Okay.
But this is a little bit odd. At night, you could see a lantern flickering about his camp. He didn't carouse with the guys that were out drinking or playing cards, gambling, things like that. He did not participate in that. But night after night, he would sit inside his crude lean-to shelter and preferring the company of his books to the humanity that struck out along the river. So, again, this is a little unusual for somebody back in those days to be reading books instead of, you know, playing cards or one thing or another.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so the time was 1855, 7 years after a guy by the name of Major Pearson B. Redding or reading. He was trapping furs along the mountain rivers, and he struck the Trinity River at a place now called Redding's or Redding's Bar.
Redding, California, was named after him, too.
Okay. And anyway, he came upon the placer deposits, which started the gold stampede into the Trinities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, again, folks, this is right up near the Oregon-California border. Well, the miners paid little attention to the fact that this was Indian country. The Hoopa Indians had been fishing here for centuries, and the fact that the miners with their rockers and what they did, you know, it muddied the river.
Yeah.
And made it difficult for these Indians to survive.
Yeah.
So the miners just kind of hacked away at the Hoopa and the Caro Sacred River rocks to get to the good gold. Well, the Indians, for the most part, out of maybe fear, because there was a lot of white people, and they had guns. Of course, the white people did. So they declined full-scale war and kind of confined their revenge to a few times they'd go out at night against individual cabins or undermanned pack trains. So they did make a few raids. But this Philip Rickmeyer's camp was particularly vulnerable because it was situated, as it was, a short way east of the confluence of the Klamath and the Trinity Rivers, where they came together.
I have a question here.
Okay.
Now, what were the tribe names again?
There was the Karuk.
Yeah.
And Hoopa.
And the Hoopa. Now, what about, were they in kind of concert with the Modocs?
They were, yes. And there was another, there was about four tribes that kind of hung around
together. I'm very familiar with the Modocs up in that area.
Right. Yeah. So, but like I say, they didn't do a lot, but they would go out on raids here and there. But like I say, this Philip Rickmeyer, he had a camp right there by the Trinity and Klamath Rivers. And it was actually where a Yurok village kind of stood up above, kind of on a bluff above where they could actually kind of watch this guy's camp.
Wow.
So, but he didn't seem to worry about it. So anyway, Rickmeyer shared his cabin with seven other prospectors, each of whom had individually purchased a share in the claim, and they were now working together. After the original owners had worked off the rich surface, placer, and moved on to other pickings, these eight men really didn't have much in common, aside from their interest in gold, you know, the gravel. And the other seven men, they were kind of loud, they were kind of obnoxious, and you probably won't believe this, but they sometimes were a little bit profane.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I know, that's a surprise. And actually, they kind of made fun of Rickmeyer.
I see.
They kind of, you know, hey, this guy's reading books. He's what's wrong with him?
Yeah.
You know? So, anyway, the reading of the books kind of, and he actually sympathized with the Indians, Rickmeyer did. So, you know, the Yurok Braves, they'd sometimes bring him fresh game, and unfortunately, some of the miners would take advantage of the Indians, and if they wanted something, they would just go to their camp, and if they had a fresh deer or elk,
they'd take it.
They'd just take it.
Ooh.
So, anyway, then came a night in June that kind of changed everybody's minds about what was going on.
I
all
see.
Right? So the plot thickens right here.
Oh, Zeb. My. Is it time for a commercial?
No.
Oh.
So picture this. It was a dark night when, as usual, Rickmeyer was lost in his reading, and his seven companions were kind of drowsy drunk on raw whiskey and deep into a game of blackjack. About midnight, the camp's watchdog, a dog by the name of Old Bully, started stirring from the floor beside Rickmeyer's chair, and his ears kind of cocked back, the hair on the back of his neck stood on end, and he began giving out kind of, you've heard of these dogs, they're kind of a throaty, sort of a growl.
Oh, yeah, Ruby does it all the time.
Yeah, and the eight men all came to the same conclusion and exclaimed, Indians. The Indians are coming.
Yeah.
Well, they turned out the lights, they grabbed their guns, and they went outside and crouched behind some boulders outside the cabin, and they were waiting in the dark to surprise their attackers, which they supposed would be Indians.
Yeah.
Well, an hour passed. Rick Meyer's companions, now somewhat sober after being out in the cold, cool air. So they were getting more and more itchy-fingered and trigger-happy, and the dog kept up this nervous kind of pacing back and forth. Yeah. So Rickmeyer decided to take the initiative. So he said, "Come on, boys." He said in a low voice, "Old Bully keeps pointing toward the river." Those Indians must be on the other side. If they don't come to us, let's take the boat and cross over to them. It's almost moonrise. It'll be too late to surprise them soon. In other words, it's still dark before the moon had come up. So it was, and as the moon comes up, obviously it's good.
Well, I thought Rick Meyer was a friend of the Indians.
Well, he is.
Oh.
Okay. So they were moving as quietly as they could. They launched the boat, and they put old Bully the dog in the front of the boat to kind of smell out, yeah, the way. And they set their course for by watching the dog. Well, the river was still kind of swollen from spring rain, so that a crossing was kind of dangerous, even by daylight, and more so at night. Well, the current was swift and full of these little eddies and one thing another, and in the dark, there was no way of knowing the location of like rocks that were submerged or tree snags and one thing another. Well, by the time they had got their way across 50 or so yards of water, they were feeling with their oars. It was getting light enough to make out the outline of objects along the shore that they were headed to. Well, old Bully the dog didn't seem interested in landing. His growls and whines indicated his concern was downstream. So, with the dog as a pilot, they inched their way along the river's edge until they could barely discern a white blur of something entangled in the branches.
Uh-oh.
Of a fallen alder tree.
Uh-huh.
Well, one of the miners leaned forward to investigate, and he said, quote, "It's a body." And kind of uneasily, he said, "Drowned, deader than a mule," he says, and on closer inspection, he said, "It's a woman. A white woman."
Wait a minute. You really got me confused now.
So there was something across the river.
Yeah.
And they thought it might be Indians. But
yeah.
As they got over there.
But it was a dead body, a woman in the water.
Yeah. Right on the right next to the shore.
Mm.
Caught in a tree. So anyway, the Indian scare kind of got forgotten. And the guys in the boat pointed the boat around to where they could lift the body over the side. And they began to inch their way back across the Klamath River. And their nervous chattering kind of roused the neighboring camps, other miners along the bar. And by the time they reached the shore, they had a pretty good crowd of guys waiting there. These other miners.
So they made it back to their side of the river.
Uh-huh. But there were enough volunteers to help hoist the corpse out of the boat and provide a good procession back to the cabin, where they laid this form out on a table, improvised by two crude benches. Now, the sight of a woman of their own kind was pretty much a rare thing in those wilderness camps, and that even death, her presence was enough to kind of get the guys talking. And
so they didn't know who she was.
No. Huh? And by morning, there was a long lineup outside the cabin door waiting to just get a glimpse of this lady that had drowned. Well, the biggest shock came when they discovered their find, the woman, was not only a white woman, but a young, very beautiful, and richly dressed woman. And from the obviously expensive jeweled jewelry she's had hanging from her ears and her just a delicate shoes, her whole wardrobe indicated that she was a lady of refinement, not just, you know, somebody that was, it had to be somebody that had money at one point.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was entirely out of place in this atmosphere of the mind. And they said, "She looks like an angel fallen from heaven." And someone whispered, and the word was rapidly passed back over the shoulders of the men outside. It was just an amazing thing, okay? Now, early the next morning, the miners held a council, for by now all of the men felt an important stake in this affair. They felt like this is something very important. Now, Rick Meyer was obviously
just left her laying on the benches?
Well, no, she's in a cabin on a bench.
Okay.
Now, Rick Meyer was obviously the most refined of the lot, and the men, by kind of unspoken agreement, began to look at him for leadership. So under his guidance, it was decided that it wouldn't be fitting for them to lay out a young lady for burial. So the only other women nearby were the Indians. So at Rick Meyer's suggestion, the miners agreed to request some of the Yurok Indian women to handle this task of getting the body ready for burial.
Yeah.
So a messenger was dispatched, and his respectful invitation to the village chief created a bit of an excitement among the Indians, and as the appearance of the girl's body had among the miners. So it was the first time the miners had asked rather than demanded anything of the Indians. So, as I mentioned before, sometimes they just go take from the Indians. This time they went and asked, could you please come and help us with this situation?
Right.
So, once convinced that this request was sincere, the Indians fell into the spirit of the occasion with as much excitement as they could. The Yuroks were well acquainted with the treachery and unpredictability of the river that lived. They thought this river was actually possessed. They thought the Klamath, they called it the Red Devil, in fact.
Mm.
So they thought the river was possessed. But anyway, so they thought it was amazing that this young woman was preserved. And the Yurok, they came down with their medicine woman. They wove a watertight basket of porcupine quills, which carried the woman. And they brought out the best of their young daughters. And the girls were, these young girls were ornamented with hoops of shell and beads and reeds woven ceremonial hats. They made the big deal, big celebration.
They didn't know who she was.
Not yet, no. So the Indians joined in this big, I don't want to say celebration, but that's kind of what it was. So anyway, they were ceremonially decked out with the young girls, and the whole village turned out as an honor guard and began to a stately caravan of dugout boats up the Klamath. And not to be outdone, the miners organized a formal welcoming party. Now, under Rickmeyer's direction, the Yuroks removed the clothing from the corpse, exclaiming and chattering over their first encounter with silk and fine linen.
Mm-hmm.
While the girls washed the clothes in the river and laid them out on rocks to dry in the sun, some of the miners began making a coffin, while others built a big fire, and they accepted contributions for feeding the assembly. So now you got a whole bunch of Indians and a whole bunch of miners getting together almost for a banquet.
Yeah. You know, can I sound a little morbid here?
Sure.
This woman that fell in the water and drowned, I mean, my goodness, they can't leave her out too long, can they?
No. So this is all taking place within a day or so.
I see.
So it's moving along. So the miners assessed themselves generously of their precious stores of beans, flour, lard, potatoes.
Holy smokes.
It cost $20 per hundredweight to pack flour by mule trained from the Union. But on this occasion, the miners were lavish with their grub. The Yuroks made their contribution, too, of venison, roots, and the grizzled miners squatted to peel spuds. Can you picture that? The miners are kneeling down, peeling potatoes.
Yeah.
They had biscuit dough alongside the Yurok Indians' mush. So by sundown, this is the next day, so it didn't take that long. By sundown, the feast was ready and the corpse laid out in style, clothes rearranged and candles burning at her head and feet. Now, through the night-long wake that followed, the miners took turns sitting solemnly by the body, recalling in hushed tones remembrances of the home folks. And I think this was an occasion that kind of brought them back thinking about home.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they sat with her all night.
Sounds like Thanksgiving.
It does. And some of them actually sang some hymns that they had remembered from back home.
My.
Now, the Indians, for their part, they set up their chant for the dead. And so the night passed with tones of Christian hymns mingling with the sing-song rise and fall of the Yurok death song. And now, again, you got two different, what do you say, communities.
Cultures
coming together. Well, the funeral was held at sunrise just as the light began spilling over the hills. And so long, these hills were sacred to the Yuroks. Anyway, somewhere on a rise near where Hopkins Creek empties into the Klamath, the girl was buried.
I see.
Okay, an old-timer living near then remembers his grandfather telling how for 7 nights following the funeral, the Yuroks kept an honorary vigil over the grave, chanting their sing-song thing for 7 days after the burial. Okay, because that was their culture. So, anyway, history doesn't record what Rickmeyer said in his eulogy, but we do know that the miners were able to make a positive identification of the body before it was consigned to the grave. So here's what happened. Sometime during the excitement of the night and the day passed, Rickmeyer had come across an item in the Humboldt Times newspaper. Okay? So, and here's what it said in the newspaper. We regret to record that Miss Cyril St. Hare, a beautiful young lady of 18, well-connected and highly educated, while on the way to the Upper Klamath to meet her fiance, a lucky miner and rancher, met with an accident that may have proved fatal, making her last day's journey on a spirited mare in company of a pack train. They were met by a band of Indians at a sudden turn in the road. The mare took fright and fled with her fair burden with the utmost speed. The most diligent search has failed to discover where to. Such a ride among the peaks and defiles of the Klamath is full of danger, and fears are entertained that she has been dashed to pieces. Her friends will be deeply grateful for any news of her, dead or alive.
Mm.
So that's what Rickmeyer found in the newspaper. So now he knew who she was.
Yeah.
So as the Indians were dressing the body, Rickmeyer discovered that there was a gold locket around her neck, and it was engraved with some initials. And just before she was buried, the miners respectfully removed her jewelry and sent it with a note to her fiancé and her family in San Francisco. But kind of in a sad note, in the spring of 1856, there was a lot of heavy snow, melting snow in the Trinity, and the high flood water ripped open the grave, carrying the body away and completely obliterating any trace. There's no way they can even know where the grave finally ended up. It's just kind of a...
But it brought both cultures together.
And again, that's the story.
What about Rickmeyer? What happened to him?
Don't know. He just... You know, probably hung around for a while.
Didn't make fun of him anymore, probably.
They probably didn't. But, you know, that's a story you don't hear about in the mining camps.
No. It really civilized them.
You know, it did. And, again, I think a lot of them started thinking, okay, here's this beautiful young lady.
Yeah.
And they might have thought, you know, I've got a beautiful daughter or a beautiful wife back home. And if something happens to her, I would hope they're taken care of.
Kind of what we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
it brings one back in a melancholy mood.
It would. And that's why, you know, the miners loved, like, especially like some of the little girls that sang a dance for them. They just would throw money. And so that's the story of the Lost Bride.
Okay, the Lost Bride.
The Lost Bride.
Wow, you did it again. Thank you. And I'm glad you had a great Thanksgiving.
We did. Thank you.
Okay.